Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders us and let us run the race. It's time to run the race. The Bible says, therefore. If you ever find a therefore in the Bible, you always have to ask the question, what did he put it? Therefore. We're going to take a look at that. Who's cheering you on? Who's your cheerleader? Who's in your corner? Who's your best cheerleader? I want you to know this morning, I want to cheer you on. I hope you came to church this morning for one reason, because when you come to church, you know that you are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Therefore, run the race. Run with me. Run with them. That was from a clip from a movie called Facing the Giants. We can run this race. We can do it. Therefore, what race are you running and who's cheering you on? I believe that coming together in church this morning, I want you to understand that you are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. If you've ever been surrounded or in a stadium, you know what it's like to have someone cheering you on. In fact, I read earlier that you have an advantage for home court, for hearing. Last year, I had a friend that got a couple of tickets, and he called me up, and it's the first time I ever got to go. It was amazing. He said, look, I'm going to the Big House at Michigan. You want to go? This is when they were still good. And he said, would you like to go? I got two tickets. I said, yeah, I'd love to go. Who's playing? He said, Notre Dame. I said, oh, I'd love to go. I've never been to the Big House. We got there. There was 110,000 people screaming like mad. It was awesome. And I think I understand when Paul writes these words in here and he says, therefore, since you are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let's run a good race. You can do this. I thought that was amazing, being there. And it was. But I have to tell you something, folks. I have never seen anything as crazy as I have when a few years ago I got a chance to go to a NASCAR race. Those people are crazy fans. Football fans are nuts. NASCAR fans are crazy. I wore my Jeff Gordon shirt and hat. And you know why you know they're crazy? Because there I was in stands rooting for Jeff Gordon. And you know what people were doing? What are you doing wearing Jeff Gordon? I'm rooting for him. I was out there cheering away. 160,000 people at the race. In the stands. I wasn't in those stands. I got pit passes. I was down in the pits, in the circle. I got to go into his garage, hang out with him, talk to him. And back then, before his divorce, he and Brooke, we went to church together, sat with them, and it was awesome. I'm in their pits, and the cars are coming down, and you could just hear them. Well, you can't hear anything when you're in the pits. And 160,000 people in the stands, every time they come around their corner, they're standing up and just screaming at the top of their lungs. It was awesome. They estimate in the infield and around the perimeter outside another 100,000 fans. A quarter of a million people going to a race. I got to tell you, they're passionate about who they race for. In fact, I was going to wear my Jeff Gordon shirt this morning. But like I said in first service, if I would have wore that today, it's amazing how people let you know, Jeff Gordon, what are you wearing that for? It's Junior. And I'm like, Junior, what has he done? Jeff Gordon's best racer ever lived. Oh, easy. Three things you can't talk about in church. Politics, religion, and NASCAR. Oh, I had people in first service. Y'all, no, Jeff Gordon, no, Jimmy Johnson, woo! I'm going, Jimmy who? Tony Stewart. I can wear my shirt in the mall, and I'll have perfect strangers walk up. They're passionate about their racing. I'll walk down the mall, and people I don't even know will have to stop in their day and somehow let me know what a horrible shirt I'm wearing. What are you doing wearing Jeff Gordon? Well, he's the greatest racer ever lived. What? And, oh, I tell you, it's on. I just opened up a box right there. You can do that. NASCAR fans are crazy. And I've been in there, and I've watched 160,000 people just going crazy in those stands. And then I think about heaven. And I'm thinking, we're going to run a race. We're in a race. And the Bible says in Hebrews chapter 12, and you take a look at that in verse 1, it says, therefore, since we're surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, well, let's see what it's there for. In your Bible, in chapter 12, it says, therefore. Well, let's go back and see what he wrote it there for. And I want to tell you that we are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses. And I want to know who's cheering you on. Who is your greatest cheerleader in your life? How are you making it in this race? Because I know there are some of you that are out of gas. Maybe even today, you feel like you are just spent. You have nothing left to give. I know there are some of you that feel like you've hit the wall. You came around a corner, you thought you had things in control, and something in your life happened, whether it was your job, a relationship, your finances, your kids, something hit, and you slid, and you spun out, and you hit the wall, and you thought, I understand you feel like you've just crashed and burned. But I want you to know, he wrote, therefore. So let's see what he said is therefore. That means go back to chapter 11, and let's see what it's there for. And here's what it's there for. I looked up what it means to be surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And if we're surrounded by it, by the way, the word witnesses is the Greek word makarion. Makarion is what we get a modern-day word for martyrs. Since we're surrounded by people who have given it and spent it, I mean passionate people. You think about these people that said, go for it. What do you want to do to my life? Since we've got these people in the stands, here's what we're going to do this morning. Let's go meet a few of them. Let's take a microphone and let's see who showed up for the race today. Let's see who's in the crowd, because who's who have shown up. There's a great group of people in the stands. And that's what he wrote in chapter 11. It says, now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. If you've ever wondered what your definition for faith is, that is right there the quintessential definition in the Bible. That is your definition of what faith is. My faith is this. I am absolutely certain of what I'm hoping for. I want you to know, as I'm going around the track this morning, I know what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping to finish, and I'm hoping for heaven as my reward. And I am certain of what I do not see. I am absolutely 100% sure that there are streets of gold waiting. I am going to walk down streets of gold. I will go to one of the 12 gates with a giant pearl on each side that is built as the holding place of that giant golden gate. And I know I will walk on those streets of gold. I know there's a mansion waiting for me in heaven. And I know I'm going to see Jesus Christ, my Redeemer. And I'm going to see Him face to face. And I'm going to be able to touch Him. And I'm going to see the nail scars in His hands. And I'm going to get to meet Him someday. And He's going to have a word for me. And I hope, my hope is, He will say, well done. You ran a good race. And I'm going to say, I couldn't have done it without being surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Look at the witnesses. Verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain. Look at verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life. Let's meet Enoch. Oh, Enoch's in the stands today. Let's go see. He's in the surrounding. What did Enoch do? Enoch, it says, was taken from this life, so he did not experience death. He could not be found because God took him away. For before him he was taken. He was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to Him must believe that He exists, and He rewards those who seek Him. Hey, Enoch, let's get a microphone. He's in the stands today. Enoch, what do you think? He says, hey, guys, run the race. Come on, run the race. And he's blowing the lid right off of that cheer can. He's saying, come on, guys, God's going to reward you by faith. Look at verse 5. We met him. Let's look at verse 7. By faith, Noah, when warned about these things, not yet seen, in holy fear, built himself an ark. You ever been there? I want you to know that you are backed by a grand stand of people who are cheering for you. Go ahead and build something. Pastor Kevin, you guys just built a bunch of cardboard boxes. I'm sure people thought, what are those kids doing out there in the rain? I wonder how it's going to go. You know what those kids just did? They did something that even ringing bells all Christmas long may not have been able to accomplish completely. 3,500 families. We partner together with those that ring bells. We partner together with those that stand on corners. We partner together with those who do what they do in the soup kitchen. because we built something. And someone says, well, what good's building a cardboard box? 3,500 families, good. That's what you guys did. Go ahead and build your boxes. And I love this. It said he built a box and it didn't make sense. Has God ever asked you to do something that didn't make sense? And it says, by faith, by faith, by faith. I am surrounded by people. And I'm looking up in the grandstands going, Enoch, by faith, man, God rewarded. Hey, look at you, Noah. You built a boat in the middle of Michigan. You don't build a boat in Ann Arbor that's 3 football fields long. You build it in Port Huron. You build it on the other side, on Lake Michigan. He built it right there, and they said, what are you doing? He says, I'm building me a boat. They said, for what? It's going to rain. What's rain? They'd never seen rain up until that point in the Bible. And he said, how long can you tread water? For what? Because it's going to rain. By faith, he built a boat. By faith. Who else is here cheering me on? Because someone said, start a church. Who said that? God. And we built a church, and look at what's happened in just 2 years. By faith, we built some cardboard boxes. By faith, we're going to be down here doing a reverse Christmas. Folks, go ahead and build a box with us. Come on down and build a Christmas story. We're building, I don't know if you've seen It's a Wonderful Life. It's one of my favorite all-time Christmas movies. I mean, Jimmy Stewart, it's me, George Bailey, don't you know me? I love it. It's the story of Christmas. It's the idea of what Christ is all about, a second chance, and that we do make a difference in this world. We're building Main Street down there. We've got people actually building the whole thing. It's a Wonderful Life. We've got a theater that's being built, and it's going to say, now showing It's a Wonderful Life. That's coming right off the manger, which is awesome. The living nativity down there. You should see it. It's being. You should jump in and say, I want to be a part of that somewhere. We'll get you signed up. Go on our website. Call the office. We need people. But this thing, as you come through the forest and you see the workshop, and you see the live nativity, after you find Jesus, what happens in your life when you get Jesus? You go right down Main Street, and it's a wonderful life. And right there we have now showing. We said, what's going to be, you know, we'll do, or coming soon, now showing. It's a wonderful life. Coming soon, Jesus. That's what's going to be playing next. And so you go right on down Main Street and just all the wonder of it. You know why we're building it? Because God said, build it. We want to help thousands of families. People have stepped up. I mean, unbelievable people have stepped up. Mercy Hospital, AT&T, the Sheriff's Department, on and on and on and on and on. Somebody the other day came and says, Kohl's Department Store, they're in. Here's a check. They want to buy tons of toys. They want to send 4 workers. The high schools, the junior highs, churches, community leaders, everybody's jumping on board. And all I did, I didn't even look, I didn't even see rain. But God said, hey, let's do a reverse Christmas. Let's give Christmas away this year. And I'm hoping thousands of families. We talked to the people in the mall here. I had a meeting. We gave them breakfast this week on Wednesday. And they came out. I thought, I don't know where this is going. The owner of the mall, he came out. He owns 13 malls. He's from Detroit. And he sat down and I explained our vision. And I said, we want to bless you. Q Country, Radio First, BTI. They're going to have live feeds out here. I said, we're going to pay for all this stuff. We're going to make this stuff happen. Come on out. We want your businesses to do well. We want you to succeed in the community. I don't care if they're Christian or not. If they do well, we do well. If we can bless them, that's what God called us to do. If their businesses do well, great. I think that's a wonderful thing. They came in all these different places from the hair care, Stephen Berry's, all Kitchen Collection, Health, all the different places down here. And there's some wonderful people and a lot of good businesses. They sat down, we explained, they all started clapping. I said, wow, I'm getting an ovation talking about doing Christmas. And they said, we want to be involved. One place says, I'm going to decorate a tree from the hair care places and get all the places. We're going to decorate 2,000 bulbs and give them away to adults with free things in them. I said, okay. And everybody says, how can we be, we want to do this. We want to be more involved. Well, how can we help pay for more radio? How can we partner with you? I said, well, I don't know. Well, maybe you can give us $50 or $100 or whatever you feel like. The owner of this mall stub says, I'll pay for all that. Don't worry about it. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. He said, I was ready to spend $12,000 to do some stuff out here. This fits perfect. Pastor, just let me know what you need. I'll take care of it. Why? Because we built a box. Why? Because I am surrounded by great people who want me to win. I'm surrounded. I look and I go, Noah, way to go. And he's cheering, going, do it. I built a boat. Do it. Build a cardboard box. Do it. Build a house. Do it. Build a marriage. Do it. Build love and respect for your parents. Do it. Build a business. Do it. Build a church. Do it. And there's Noah up there going, come on, guys, I did it. You can do it too. It will float. Who else is in the stands? Abraham. Hey, Abraham, you're an old guy. He's up there going, I may be old, with his long beard as he sits up there. He goes, but I got lots of kids. You weren't supposed to have kids. And it says, by faith, Abraham, verse 11, even though he was past age and Sarah was barren, was unable to become a father because he considered God faithful who had made the promise. But go before this. I like Abraham in verse 8. Abraham, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. Man, can I relate to that on most of my road trips. I had a girl ask me the other day, she goes, Pastor, I have to say, I was counting it up. I've been on a lot of road trips with you over my years in junior high and high school. I don't think there's been one. You haven't been lost. Do you do that on purpose? I went, no. I think God just allows that to happen. Abraham went to a place, even though he didn't know where he was going. Folks, can I tell you something? By faith, he's up there going, go, I don't know. You don't know where this is going to go. I know you don't know where you're going with your family. I know you don't know where you're going with your finances. But trust me, I've been there. Let me cheer you on. With God, it's going to work out. With God, it's going to work out. I didn't even use that in first service. Getting some cheers out of him. Poor little guy, you just woke him up. Good job. Oh, by the way, we could use some nursery workers. Good segue. By faith, I am surrounded by people. Folks, I am surrounded by all of heaven by faith of people. Therefore, run a good race by faith. I mean, go on. Look at this, guys. Are we kind of catching this by faith? Let's go on. Look at verse 20. By faith, Isaac. 21, by faith, Jacob. 22, by faith, Joseph. 23, by faith, Moses. And then go over, look at your Bible in verse 29. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea on dry land. By faith, in 30, the walls of Jericho fell down. Verse 31, by faith, the prostitute Rahab became welcome to God because she helped God's people. By faith, by faith, by faith. And I love in verse 32, and what more shall I say? I do not have time to even tell you. I do. About Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice. You got to see this in your Bible, folks. This is amazing what they did by faith. They gained what was promised. They shut the mouth of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Here it is. Some faced jeers and flogging, while others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskin and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. And you know where they sit today? Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, David, how was it killing the giants of your life? Gideon, 300 men, you took on an army. Gideon, amazing. David's three warriors. You three guys went and got him a cup of water in the very city of Jericho against your army's best wishes. You guys went and got some water for your commander-in-chief. One of you guys killed 100 men, one being 9 feet tall. I'm surrounded by great people. And they're all going, go for it. Run the race. I have a grandstand. And you know what else I have? That's just verse 1, by the way. Surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. You know what verse 2 says? If verse 1 says, I'm backed by a grandstand, verse 2 says, I am backed by a grand sponsor. Verse 2. It says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, who is the author and perfecter of our faith. In chapter 12, verse 2, Jesus is my grand sponsor. When I was sitting in the pit for Jeff Gordon, looking at this million-dollar car that goes at over 200 miles an hour, 3,000 pounds, I realized if he crashed that, you know, they've got several other cars. They've got some pretty good sponsors backing them up. And you know what God's saying? Folks, I want to back you up. Jesus wants to be our sponsor. I almost wore my shirt. I grabbed it this morning. I had it in my closet. My wife says, you going to wear that? My DuPont Jeff Gordon shirt. I said, I think so. You're not going to wear that. Wives, you're so good to us. Us men, we need you to get us dressed in the morning, whatever. Maybe some of you guys don't need it. I need it. My wife says, you're going to wear that again? I said, yeah, it's Jeff Gordon, DuPont, Jeff Gordon, Frito-Lays, and all the other sponsors he has. She said, you know, people are going to come up to you and say, oh, Jeff Gordon, why don't you get another one? I said, because he's my man. So I cheer for on Sunday afternoons. Yeah, but you know, he's got his sponsors, multi-million dollars. I mean, I think one of his sponsors gives him $70 million a year. You know why he's a great racer? Because he's got some great people that sponsor him. I mean, they dump a lot of money to make him a great racer. I think I could be a great racer for $70 million a year. And that's not even to win the race. That's just to drive the car. I want you to know something. You have a great sponsor behind you in Jesus Christ. He ought to sponsor our lives. Instead of having DuPont on my chest, I ought to have Jesus Christ, and He is my sponsor. And with Jesus Christ, I want you to know something this morning. You will never lose a race. With Jesus Christ as your sponsor, you cannot lose a race. With Jesus Christ as your sponsor, the Bible says in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Put that on your chest. My Bible tells me in Romans chapter 8, if God is for me, who can be against me? Put that one as a sticker on your chest. You ought to be walking around with sponsor stickers of Jesus Christ and scriptures all over your life. You ought to put it on your feet. That says to Joshua chapter 1, everywhere you put your foot, I will bless you. You ought to have Philippians 4:13 right on your back. You ought to have these things because if Jesus Christ sponsors you, you will not and cannot lose a race. I've never lost a race in my life with God as I'm running this race. You will never lose with God. He sponsors us. You know, we live in a world right now that if you don't win the way the world wants you to win, they will fire you. University of Michigan just hired a new coach. They have broken a lot of records this year. They lost to a MAC team. They've lost to this. It's the first year in, I don't know, 19 years. They won't be going to a bowl game. And I thought, oh, Rich Rodriguez, that poor guy, he could get fired. They're talking about firing him his first year because he's not winning. I want you to know, we live in a world, if you don't perform in the NBA, you're out of there. If you don't do this, you're out of there. Do you know that we live in a world that says you either perform or you're gone? And yet, if you don't live in this world, but you live by faith, do you know if you have Jesus Christ as your grand sponsor, He says this, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. Yeah, but God, I'm not coming in first in this thing. He says, I don't care. I will never leave you. Lord, I crashed and burned. I didn't see this coming. He says, I'm not going to leave you. I will back you. I have all of heaven backing you. Fix your eyes on Jesus. He's the author and He's the perfecter of my faith. I signed a contract with Jesus Christ 25 years ago. I became a Christian. And when I became a Christian, He said, I will be your sponsor for the rest of your life, Mitch. Do you have Jesus Christ as your sponsor this morning? Have you said, Jesus Christ, I'll sign on the dotted line. And He says, if He's sponsoring, I'm not going anywhere. And that's why in 25 years, I have never lost a race with God. I've run out of gas. I've crashed this thing a few times. But I can keep coming back to Him because in the contract, there's a little provision that He put in there for me. He says, if you sin, in 1 John 1:9, if you confess your sin, He is faithful and just to forgive you of your sin and cleanse you from all your unrighteousness. Jesus Christ isn't going anywhere, folks. You may quit. You might quit the team, and you might go race for someone else. And I pray, God, that you never change when you have Jesus Christ in your life. He is the contract. He is my grand sponsor. And he has sponsored me. And you know what? He empties heaven. Someone says, how do you do so well? I think it's because, and I say well, define well, okay? I got the bills to pay. I got the kids to raise. I got the work to do. I'm with you guys. You understand? I mean, I go there and go, okay, do we put some grocery on the table this week? Or do we put some gas in the car? Do we drive a little less? I mean, I'm there, all right? I have the same issues. Are you grounded for not doing your homework? I got the same issues. When I say that I've never lost a race, you understand this. As I've trusted Jesus Christ, he is always there and he's always faithful to me. And I want you to know that. My life is not perfect, but I have a perfect sponsor in my life. Okay, do you understand the difference? My life is a mess, to be honest with you, okay? All right? I got teenagers. All right, anybody testify? You got teens? You got a mess. And then I got an 8-year-old. And that just is challenging. And then I got one, I got them all over. And then on top of that, well, it's just life, right? You guys understand, we're living life. But I've got a perfect sponsor in my life. His name is Jesus Christ. And he said, in this world you will have trouble, but be of good cheer. I've already overcome this world. I'm just waiting for you to come see what's waiting for you. Run the race. I am surrounded by people who are cheering me on. I don't know what you're running. I don't know who's cheering you on this morning, but I hope you can hear all of heaven screaming. I hope right now you understand heaven has already blown the lid off. This morning they are screaming. And if you could open your ears by faith of evidence of things that you can't see or hear, additive, that God in heaven right now opens up the can, and if you could just hear heaven screaming for you, if you can just look around, they are cheering you on. I believe those who have gone on, the saints who have gone on before us, moms and dads, my sister, my aunt who prayed for me and helped bring me to Jesus Christ, my uncle who said, a truck driver in California, and I trucked with him when I was 14 years old. We went up and down the West Coast when I lived out there, my Uncle Richard. And I remember when I was trucking with my uncle, and he'd say, hey, I'm going to head over to the bar for a while. Here's a couple of joints. Go ahead and get high. I'll be back later. I was 14. My uncle, who was married, had two girls, divorced, went off, remarried, had two girls. She moved and had two girls and remarried. Years later, after we're in leave California, I'm in South Dakota. I'm now 18 years old. My uncle calls on the phone and says, hey, Bob, my dad, I got saved, and I'm coming to South Dakota. God told me to come save everyone. He went to build a box. By faith, my uncle had remet his wife. They'd both been divorced, both had two kids in those relationships, remarried, both brand new Christians, had six girls now from three different relationships, packed their station wagon with clothes, gave away their house, furniture, sold his semi, and moved to a farm in South Dakota and sat night after night telling my dad about Jesus Christ, to which I said, bull. Coming home drunk, my first year of college, thinking, what is this garbage? And my Uncle Richard went to heaven 5 years ago, and his sister joined him last Thanksgiving along with my sister. And they're dancing. They're dancing in my father's fields of grace. And they're cheering, going, it's everything you said. It's everything we said. It's everything he said. And I'm looking up going, Richard, Tammy, Dorothy, all of them. Because they're all in heaven and they're cheering. And I look up and there's Moses and there's David and there's Gideon and there's Deborah and there's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I'm looking and going, God, they are cheering and saying, come on, run the race, run the race, run the race. And I say, I'm going to run the race. Because they're all up there and they're cheering me on and I got a great sponsor. And Abraham did it. And who came right behind him? Who was right behind him? His son Isaac. And who was right behind him? His son Jacob. And then not far behind them was Moses. And not far behind them was another one. And not far behind them was one of the prophets. And not far behind them was Peter. And Peter went and got his brother, or his brother Andrew, and he went and got his brother Peter. And Peter, and then finally Paul comes behind them. And they're just kind of right up there. I don't know if you know what drafting is in racing. It's at 220 miles an hour. A racer will get right up with that 3,000-pound car and get his front bumper up underneath the bumper of the guy in front of them. It's called drafting. And what they're using, that other person's air, and getting right behind them to save on their energy, their gas, and their fuel. And they run the race right tight, and then it gives them a slingshot to go right by them. And you know what these guys are all doing? Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Andrew and Peter and Paul and Mother Teresa. And Friday, Billy Graham just turned 90 years old. And he's preached to more kings and nations and kingdoms than anybody I've ever heard of. And he turned 90 on Friday. And you know what? He was right there. And you know what? His son Franklin was up there. And they were interviewing him. And Franklin says, "I'm right there, Dad. I'm right behind you. Dad, I'm right behind you. I'm drafting you. Because there's been a great cloud of witnesses and I'm in. I'm on the team." And I say, who's coming behind Franklin Graham? How about you? Who's coming behind the pastor? Who's coming behind them? Who, kids, you coming behind your parents and saying, "Dad, I'm right behind you. I'm picking up where you left off. I'm going to draft right behind the God that you serve. And I'm going to serve the same God for the next generation." I don't know about you, but I am surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And by faith, who's cheering you on today? I hope you would let me be your cheerleader today and say, keep running the race. Get right behind there of those who've gone before us, because we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Martin Luther in 1517 said this. He was climbing up a group of steps that you can find over where he was professor. It's called the Stairs of Scala Sancta. And he would climb the step and he'd say, "Lord, help my grandmother who is dead, that she might get to go to heaven. Lord, I pray for so-and-so who never knew you, and let them go to heaven. Lord," and he would climb these many, many, many stairs till he got to the top. And he did that quite often, as religious leaders did. Scala Sancta means the stairs of sanctification. And he would climb those, and he'd say these prayers. Something inside was empty. And what he found out when he got to the top one day, he was doing this, his ritual as he did, and Martin Luther got to the top of these stairs and he realized, something's not right. I'm just going through religion. This isn't right. I'm not running any kind of race. He got to the top, and in the biography, "Here I Stand," about Martin Luther that I read in college, I remember just being fascinated by his story. At the age of 5, being struck by lightning, and that was his sign when he lived that God wanted him to be a preacher. That's always a good sign. You live through that? Hey, good luck. He got to the top of the stairs and the words hit him. Sola fide, sola fide, sola fide, sola fide. And he got up and he realized his whole life he'd missed it. He'd missed it. He'd been trying to earn his salvation. He missed it. He'd been trying to run his own race without God. He'd been trying to get to heaven on his own. And sola fide, sola fide. He got so excited. He went and he grabbed his Bible and he began studying it. And he began reading that Jesus wanted to be the part of his life. Jesus wanted to stamp it by faith, by faith, by faith, by faith, by faith. And so he went sola fide. And he got so excited about it. He wrote down, he went and he researched and he said, the church, which was very corrupt at the time, he said, "This is what we really believe. Why are we preaching this? Why aren't we teaching this? Why aren't we living this?" And he grabbed the 95 Theses and he ran to the dorm of Wittenberg where he taught at university. And he posted it and he nailed it up there, the 95 Theses, sola fide. And the church went, "What are you doing?" He says, "This is what we believe." And they said, "Shut it off. Tear it down. Don't you put those things up there." He goes, "But that's what we believe. Those are actually our church creed, sola fide." And they said, "Take it down or we will..." And the term is excommunicate you, which the Pope then has the authority, according to their belief, to damn him to hell forever, close heaven's door and say, "You will spend eternity in hell. Take it down." And Martin Luther said, "But this is what we believe." They had an entire church trial, a huge trial just on Martin Luther. And they said, "Renounce it, renounce it." He said, "I can't." And in this race, as he's running, could you see all of heaven going, "Hang in there, hang in there, hang in there, sola fide." And he hung in there and he stood there at the tribunal and they said, "Martin Luther, we excommunicate you from the church. You are now damned to hell. What do you have to say for yourself?" And he stood up and at the end of his book and his biography, and here it is, the title of his book, "Here I Stand, for I Can Do No Other." Martin Luther took a stand, a grand stand, because he was surrounded by people and they kicked him out of the church. It didn't stop Martin Luther. And he began one of the greatest movements of Solo Fide to this day. And you believe Solo Fide, which is faith alone will save you. By faith, by faith, by faith. Let me be your cheerleader. Because there have been others that have gone before us. Let's get together and let's cheer each other on. Let's be a grandstand for Jesus Christ. Let's stand together.